You are listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who, episode number 9.
I'm a doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years.
I am Scottish. I can complain about things.
Shush.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who, the show dedicated to season 8 or series 8 of Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi. Capaldi, it's probably Italian, his ancestors, playing the Doctor. And we have arrived at episode 9 called Flatline. Joining me today to talk about this episode, two gentlemen, Jimmy Akin, all the way from, well, the area of San Diego, is that correct?
That's right.
And from the other side of the United States, Mr. Dom Bettinelli.
Hello, Father.
How are you?
I'm great. Glad we could be recording this now.
Yeah, we had some technical trouble, and well, it's just good to know that it's not just a doctor who is struggling with technology from time to time. At least my computer still is regular size, and I hope it's not shrinking in the meantime.
Miniaturization in computers is a good thing.
That's right. I bet you that Tim Cook would pay a lot of money for the technology or the problem that caused the TARDIS to shrink. Because if he can do the same with his iPads and iPhones. Actually, I think now with the new iPhone 6 Plus, a lot of people are hoping for some way to shrink it again.
All I know is I started with this podcast with a MacBook Pro in front of me. Now I have an 11-inch MacBook Air, so I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I may end up with an iPad Retina or something.
Let us know when it gets down to an iPod Nano.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's start the show with a brief recap of what happened in this episode. And, well, Jimmy, before I give you the floor, let's listen to the sound of the trailer here. Flatline.
Oh, that can't be good.
Something nearby is leeching all the external dimensions.
Aliens.
Possibly. Oh, what am I kidding? Probably. Whatever they are, they're experimenting. They're testing. They are dissecting. Trying to understand us, trying to understand three dimensions. Life support failing.
Well, that was the sound of the trailer, but Jimmy, can you bring back the memories of what happened in this episode?
Sure. So in this episode, Flatline, the Doctor is taking Clara back to meet Danny for lunch, and they arrive at the right time, but the wrong place. They arrive in Bristol, which is a city very close, coincidentally, suspiciously, to Wales, where they film Doctor Who. So they're in Bristol, and something's really wrong, they notice. The doors, the internal doors of the TARDIS, are smaller than they normally are. And when they open the doors, they find out that the TARDIS itself is like half its normal size. This is very interesting to the Doctor. He doesn't know why this is happening. Clara and the Doctor are themselves both normal sized. So it's not like everything has shrunk. It's just the external manifestation of the TARDIS has shrunk. And it keeps shrinking. In fact, it gets down to a size and a weight that enables Clara to put it in her purse. And the Doctor, meanwhile, is sealed off inside the TARDIS. And he can basically, like, stick his hand out of the TARDIS doors or put his face up to the TARDIS doors. But there's no way he can get out at this point. So Clara begins investigating the situation, what might be causing the TARDIS to shrink in this way. And she meets a work crew that's like cleaning up graffiti and so forth. And she meets a guy from the work crew named Riggsy. And as soon as she meets Riggsy, she decides to have a little fun and declares herself to be the Doctor. Meanwhile, she's got a kind of radio connection to the Doctor inside the TARDIS, so he's hearing all of this, and at first he's not pleased at all that she's impersonating him. But it's a lot of fun for the viewers. It turns out that that the shrinkage of the TARDIS is connected to some disappearances of local people there in Bristol who have apparently vanished, but then pictures of them appear as murals on the wall of this tunnel, or pictures of parts of them appear other places in town. And it turns out that Bristol is being invaded by creatures from a two-dimensional universe, from a flatland. And various people are dying as this happens, it's realized. And so Clara goes on this kind of hero's journey where she must play the pivotal role of the effectively of the doctor in organizing the locals and trying to figure all this out. And so Rigsy becomes kind of her companion, and the rest of the work crew kind of becomes, you know, other bystanders like you'd have caught up in a typical Doctor Who adventure, and some of whom end up being cannon fodder for the two-dimensional invaders. The doctor is trying to communicate with them, not assuming that they're hostile. But their efforts to communicate are not very successful. They end up being able to communicate a few numbers back and forth. And it turns out the numbers are those of the uniforms of the people they have either just killed or are just about to kill. So not really particularly friendly seeming. During the course of all this, they end up in some underground tunnels for a subway system, what we'd call it in the United States anyway. And as they're running through corridors, a very typical Doctor Who thing, they find places where the door handles, you know, the doorknobs and the wheels you turn to open the doors have been flattened and had the third dimension sucked out of them. So to try to counter this, the Doctor invents a device whose name is at first unclear to Clara, but it turns out to be a TARDIS instead of a TARDIS with its weird dimensional properties. He's got a TARDIS to try to restore three dimensions to these door handles so they can go through the doors. At this point, the two-dimensional creatures turn 3D, and they're kind of shambling, creepy zombie monsters based on the people they had sucked the third dimension out of. About this point, the doctor comes up with a solution, but unfortunately, with all the dimensions being sucked out of the TARDIS and with the aliens draining power from it, the TARDIS now has no power. And so the doctor is helpless. In fact, there's even one point where the TARDIS is about to be run over by a train, and with its shields down and with no power, it's very vulnerable. The doctor is able, though, to get it into lockdown mode, but once that happens, he's not really able to do anything with it. At this point, Clara is on her own in organizing the locals, and she has an idea of how to save the situation, how to get the doctor some more power. So what she does is she gets Rigsy, who himself is a graffiti artist, to paint a door handle on a poster that they can hang on a wall in the tunnels and trick the two-dimensional invader people into using their own dimension powers to try to three-dimensionalize that handle so they can get through the imaginary door. In the process of doing this, they discharge just the energy that the TARDIS needs to repower itself, and Clara drains that power into the TARDIS, and the doctor pops out and uses the solution that he has to save the day and send all of the invaders, who he dubs the Boneless, back to their own dimension, warning them that this plane of reality is protected by him. Afterwards, the doctor is saying goodbye. The doctor and Clara are saying goodbye to the work crew, and Clara wants to know the doctor's opinion of how she did in the doctor role. And he is reluctant to say that she did good, but eventually he says, "You were an exceptional doctor, but goodness had nothing to do with it," which is an interesting thing I'm sure we'll talk about. Finally, at the end of the episode, we cut away to Missy, who we haven't seen in several episodes, and she's got an iPad with Clara's face on it, and she says, "Clara, my Clara, I chose well." Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the episode. One other thing happens during the course of the episode that's particularly notable, which is the doctor figures out that Clara has been lying to him about Danny, and the fact that Danny Pink is not really aware that Clara is still traveling with the doctor. But she had previously told the doctor that Danny was aware and that he was fine with it, and the doctor compliments her on having lied successfully to him.
Yes. It's essential for survival, according to him, but at the same time, it's an annoying habit, or it becomes almost like an addiction, which is, Dom, it's one of the themes that you brought up last week, I think, the whole, you know, recurring addiction to power, I think.
Well, I think for Clara, it's more an addiction for her to the travel, to the excitement. She's got all the classic signs of someone who's showing signs of an addiction, where you know the lies.
Yeah, it's like patients.
And I think that is building us up for something. They may pay it off very quickly, because they've been this last few episodes setting things up and then paying them off very quickly, like the next episode. And so I suspect either in the next episode or the next few episodes, we're likely to have the addiction thing pay off. And I'm thinking the Doctor may actually put Clara off the TARDIS for her own good, which would be the first time that's happened to a companion in that way.
That would be pretty dramatic if he would kick her out because she's getting too much attached, which is always a problem, I think. He wants to have a companion, and at the same time never wants to be dependent on the companion itself, on the particular companion. Oh, it's interesting. Dom, how would you evaluate the entire episode? What were the highlights? What were the weaker points?
Well, I would say that it reminded me very much of a 1980s music video for the band A-ha. I don't know if any of you remember that, but the song "Take on Me," or to be in a little more serious vein, a book called "Flatland" by author Edwin Abbott that I had to read when I was in high school for my math class. And it's all about people who live in a two-dimensional world. So it was a geometry sort of, what would it be like to be in two dimensions and not three? So I really had that sense going in, these flat people. I think that it was a good episode in itself as a story, but it also worked as a larger story about the larger themes that we've been seeing in this season and Clara's long-term relationship to the Doctor. So we have the continuation, like we said, of this, of her lying to him. But I think we're also coming to a head on something that a lot of fans have noticed, and some have just thought it might have been lazy writing, but others have, and myself included, think that there's something more going on here. Why is Clara so much in the front? We've talked about this before, I think, in other episodes. Why is she so much in the forefront of all these episodes, where she's doing the work? She is the conscience. She is the motivator. She's
the doctor in this episode.
She's the doctor. And in fact, literally in this episode, she takes on that title and role.
And then
some people have also been complaining that the Doctor is just too cranky. He's too mean to her. Like, why is he so cranky and mean to her all the time? And I think it has to do with the scene with Missy at the end. And again, I don't want to hop too far ahead, but this kind of comes up several times in this episode, where I think he's aware of something. And that is, we can speculate later. But
yeah, there seems to be a bigger plan.
Exactly. There's something bigger going on under the surface that isn't going to be revealed maybe in the next three episodes, the final three of this season. It wasn't revealed in this episode. And we're going to look back, I think, and go, oh, that explains that.
I hope so. That's what I love. Jimmy, how would you like did you like this episode? Jimmy, are you there?
I'm here.
There you go.
I really liked it. I thought that the previous episode I would have given a 7 to, like most of the episodes this season. The only one I really hated was Robot of Sherwood, which I gave a 4 to. This one I would give at least an 8 to, and maybe a 9. I thought it was really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. The only thing that it didn't have that would have made it a 10 for me would be some deep emotional resonance that you get occasionally in Doctor Who episodes, like back when they first introduced River Song in Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead. That had this connection to the Doctor's overall life story in a very powerful way. And this didn't really have that, but it had everything else I would want in an episode, and so I really enjoyed it.
It was very creative, also visually changing all the time. That you had the funny, shrinking TARDIS, which in itself is already great to look at. But then you had the I thought pretty impressive special effects with the crawling walls and the carpet and stunts.
What really did it for me in terms of the visuals? I mean, we'd known that the people were being flattened and that, residue of them was ending up on the walls and things like that. But then when we saw a couch collapse into two dimensions in front of us,
brilliant.
It's like, wow, this is not just people. This is the whole environment that's being affected by these things.
It went way beyond the special effects that we saw in that music video, which was, I think, with pencil drawings or something like that.
You know, yeah. I think these are the most inventive monsters they've had in a while as well. I mean, I can't think of any that were as clever as these. I mean, they had elements of vampires and zombies and other types of monsters we've seen, but they were unique on their own, and I was really appreciative.
And they received the name, so perhaps they'll be back for more. Let's take a short break here, and we'll be back right after this. If you like this episode and this podcast, and you want to have a very easy way to support us also financially, there is actually a free way in which you can do that. And that is by, if you ever go to Amazon to shop, you know, buy a book, a CD, or do they even sell CDs anymore? I don't remember. But anyway, it could be, you know, your new TV or anything. If you do that and you're already planning on getting those great deals there, think of our network before you do so. And if you go to our main website at sqpn.com or at our sub website for this particular podcast, which is doctorwho.sqpn.com, you will see an Amazon banner. And if you click on that banner, you'll find a couple of links to the various Amazon stores. And depending on where you live in the world, click on the link that pertains to your region. And if you purchase something on Amazon through that link, the Amazon will, in return, give us a little contribution. It won't cost you anything more than you would normally pay, so you still get the same good prices, but Amazon will help us pay the bills for our bandwidth, our, you know, servers, the computer, the website, and all that. It's a very easy way to support us. So if you think Amazon, think Secrets of Doctor Who, think SQPN.com. We thank you in advance for keeping us in mind, and of course, for all your other support. You're still listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who. I'm Father Roderick, and I'm talking with Jimmy Akin and Dom Bettinelli about the episode Flatline. And before the break, we were talking about these new enemies that are introduced quite spectacularly, I have to say. I loved the kind of zombie pursuit in the tunnels of the subway, which was actually using quite some cool new technology where they scanned in the actors. There is like a behind-the-scenes video on the BBC website where they show you how each and every of these, you know, victims of the two-dimensional world were scanned in completely and then projected on some 3D shape. Oh, I don't know exactly how they do it, but it looked spectacular. And I was struck by the fact that the Doctor explicitly gives them a name. And it's, what was it again? The Boneless.
Yeah.
Now, this is a name that when they were pitching stories for this season that came up, there was one of the writers who presented, I think, four different ideas for enemies or monsters. And one of the monsters was called the Boneless. And I think that Moffat ran with that. It was like, oh, gosh, that's going to be an awesome name. But I was like, we've seen some anonymous monsters in this season where I was thinking, we could probably, that's enough for one episode. But this particular enemy, we don't really know why they were trying to invade this world, right? So there could be a bigger plan there. There could be something a bit akin to what we saw in previous seasons with that crack in the wall and, you know, them. That world trying to seep into our world. What do you think? Is this going to be is this part of a bigger plan, or is this just a monster of the week?
My sense is it's a monster of the week, and the way they kind of, because if it was one of the big, you know, story arcs, they would have introduced it at the beginning of the season, and it would connect to that in a bigger way. And they don't seem particularly boneless. When you actually look at them, they seem to have skeletons, and they're walking around, and they're a little wobbly. But but there's no obvious reason to call them that. And the Doctor only does that as this kind of theatrical flourish at the very end, as he's sending them back to their dimension, and he says, "And I dub you the Boneless." And to me, that was like, okay, that's just so the fans can have something to call them, so people don't have to say weird circumlocutions like, you know, those two-dimensional people from that episode.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. It's something, though, that if I were a writer, which I'm fortunately not, otherwise the series would not have the success it currently has, but I would still try to kind of imprint a certain mark on each season and at least come up with one memorable race of monsters or invaders or, you know, something that can be brought back in the future. And that's why I was thinking perhaps this is it, but perhaps not.
Well, I think they can be brought back. The thing is that they are such a concept monster that you need to find ways to exploit that concept that are new and different. It's kind of like the Weeping Angels. You know, they were a really high concept monster when they were first introduced, but they were able to think of ways to kind of expand the Weeping Angel mythology so it didn't feel like the same episode all over again.
Yes, yes. But there is something extremely creepy about these monsters literally hiding the walls, and the way it was shown with the special effects, I was like, gosh, yeah, that is creepy, that police officer that gets sucked in and then displayed on the wall almost like a trophy, you know, with the whole nervous system as a, you know, a mural. I was fascinated by that. And also the fact that they could show up anywhere as long as there are walls. That enemy can be lurking there and you might not even notice it because it's so well hidden. That was what I loved about the opening sequence with the guy who was like all in distress, and then he's like, how are they going to resolve this? And then he disappears and you get that incredible camera move where it's only at the very last second that you discover that perspective and that the guy is actually trapped in the ornamentation on the wall.
Yeah, that sequence, I thought, on one level was very effective, but some of the dialogue that he's speaking while he's talking into the phone, he's talking to the equivalent of a 911 operator. I guess in England it's 999. And he's saying things like, I finally figured it out. They're all around us. There's no place to hide, that kind of stuff. And that dialogue actually felt a little familiar to me. Because it was suggesting, I mean, okay, what other things have we had like that recently? We've had the silence, and we've had the unnamed hiding creatures from the episode Listen, and it just felt a little familiar of, okay, great, another nameless, totally surrounding us monster. And I thought that dialogue could have been punched up a little bit, but I thought the scene overall was very effective.
Yeah, I almost got a bit of a Breaking Bad vibe, and it's probably because of the sun, you know, shining through the window. It had that same yellow color that was in so many scenes in the first season of Breaking Bad. The guy had a beard. I was like, wow, is this a crossover? But turns out it was just regular Doctor Who. But it almost felt like a totally different television series, the way it was filmed. The writer of this episode was the same one as for the previous episode, Mummy on the Orient Express. It's Jamie Matheson. And it's his, actually, these are the first two episodes he ever wrote for Doctor Who, which I think is quite an achievement because both of them, I think, really stand out from most of this season.
Yeah, he's definitely leapt to the front in terms of rapidly building a lot of fan support as a writer.
Yeah, and it's actually really, I think, good to bring in some new blood and some new ideas. It's always, must be very hard to come up with original ideas, and there are tons and tons of references in each episode to things that they've already done in the long, long past of Doctor Who, but then to come up with something original. Like, I even think that a shrinking TARDIS, it's not the first time, is it?
No, there have been two previous times when the TARDIS has shrunk. The one that most people will have seen is in the final episode of Tom Baker's run as the Doctor, as the Fourth Doctor. In that episode, he goes to the planet Legopolis, and the Master interferes with a block transfer computation that the Logopolitans are doing, and it causes the TARDIS to shrink. And everything in it apparently shrinks too, though. So it's not like in this episode where only the outside shrinks. They don't really do a lot with that. It's a very brief thing, and the Doctor is, it's kind of one of the mid-episode cliffhangers. So they the TARDIS quickly gets restored to normal size. But more impressive than that is another episode or another series that most people have never seen because it occurred right at the beginning of Doctor Who, when we were still first figuring out what the TARDIS was and what it was capable of back during the William Hartnell era, that of the first Doctor. There was a series called Planet of the Giants. And it's really fascinating, especially if you're watching them in order, because you know you're just learning about the TARDIS, and all of a sudden there's this episode where the TARDIS materializes on Earth, but it's materialized at a completely different scale, so that people are basically one inch. The TARDIS crew is basically one inch tall, and they have to navigate their way through this lawn. And they're finding things like giant dead ants, and they're walking through blades of grass that are huge, and they end up being menaced by a cat that's full size.
That sounds like a Disney movie, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
except it comes way before that, and it turns out that at this house where they've landed, there's like these foreign spies that are up to no good, doing something sinister, and the TARDIS crew at one inch scale has to defeat that plan, and then also get themselves back to the TARDIS and back to regular size. And it's actually quite an interesting episode that doesn't fit the standard model of Monster of the Week.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fascinating. Every time you remind us of these older episodes, I want to go back in the archives and watch a couple of them because it's. The other day, a great Tom Baker episode, or actually, it wasn't that great. That was the thing. Mm-hmm. I was watching it and I enjoyed it because it felt very familiar. It was like, wow, that is the Doctor Who of my youth. But I was struck by how slow everything was and how much time they took. It was like an episode where they land on a planet and the Doctor Who is examining these silver balls. And then at one point, I think they're like people are disappearing and but it takes forever and it's like the entire for an hour you're watching something that basically story-wise doesn't move at all and it's like a two-parter.
That's one of the things about television in general is that it's much faster paced now than it was before. Some of the Doctor Who series is, you know, it was on every week. And so some of the series were like, and they had very little budget, so they wanted to make the series as long as possible so they wouldn't have to make new sets.
Mm-hmm.
So you had series that were commonly like six episodes long back then. It'd be six half-hour episodes. And frequently, you know, fans who have watched that era have noted how much padding there is and just mindless running around just to fill up extra episode time.
Yeah. Just creating more and more programs for the same budget. But it makes for some very creative storytelling from time to time. Let's take another short break and let me tell you what's going on the network, SQPN, where we not only have shows about Doctor Who, but also shows about plenty of other big, you know, franchises, popular topics like Star Wars. Dom, can you tell us what's happening in Secrets of Star Wars right now?
Well, we've been talking about lately the big rumors coming out, the leak of concept art from the filming of Episode 7.
Yeah.
Episode 7's principal photography is ending soon, and so things are just getting ramped up, and we got all kinds of things to talk about in the near future on Star Wars.
It's going to be interesting to see what will happen once they completely finish filming, because then, of course, everything will be moved to the digital realm, which is basically Skywalker Sound and Industrial Light and Magic, and they will do their magic for, almost more than a year, I think, before the movie premieres. So we hope that we will still get some news from time to time that we can talk about. How would you say that they've dodged the rumor mill for now?
By J.J. Abrams taking lessons from Apple Computer, apparently. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing how they've been in this age of the internet and smartphones. They've been able to lock it down. Maybe they just have really dedicated people who've who understand the need for surprise and wonder at the first time something appears on the screen. And they just don't care about you and me who need to talk about this sort of thing on a podcast.
I almost feel that this whole process of pre-production and well, actually filming is almost considered to be storytelling on its own, where you never really know if they are lying or not, if the rumors that we see were leaked deliberately or not. In that respect, J.J. Abrams is a little bit like the Doctor. And he's lying sometimes in our face, and we don't even realize it. Well, that's the kind of stuff that we talk about on The Secrets of Star Wars. You can find all that and more on SQPN.com. You're still listening to The Secrets of Doctor Who. We're talking about the episode Flatline. And Dom, in this episode, we see quite a few interesting new things, or we discover new capabilities of the TARDIS. It's not always able to translate. It can go in lockdown mode.
Siege mode.
Yeah, where it even changes shape. And we see a little hint at the the walking hand of the Addams Family.
That was the most awesome thing.
For
those who haven't seen the episode yet, just so they'll know what we're talking about, there's a point at which the TARDIS gets dropped accidentally onto some train tracks, and it's going to be smashed by a train, and it doesn't have the ability to move. And Clara, via the radio link with the Doctor, is saying, well, can't you move it? And he's going, it doesn't have any power. What part of that don't you understand? And she says, no, can't you move it, like Adam's Family?
Yes.
And it twigs for the Doctor, and he sticks his hand out of the TARDIS and then flips it up vertical so he can use his hand to crawl across the train tracks like Thing from the Addams Family. And it is the most
brilliant, awesome,
surprising, didn't expect that moment in a long time.
And it was pretty well done, even visually. Like totally this hand, like almost like a tortoise.
All those actually, those moments where you see that interaction between the Doctor inside the tiny TARDIS and Clara, where his hand comes out into the real world. I mean, all of those effects were so well done.
Yes.
I mean, the earlier where he's like, go that way, and he sticks his hand out and she says, okay, just don't ever do that again. You know, it's a great moment.
There were some great sight gags with the TARDIS in the purse. My favorite was where she needs to knock down a wall and suddenly there's this huge sledgehammer coming up out of her purse.
It's almost like that endless purse of Hermione in Harry Potter, where she can just store, I don't know how much, but it's like the most gigantic objects can be all fit in that magical purse.
You know, speaking of the TARDIS ending up on the train tracks, I never got, and maybe you guys could kind of give your perspective on that. I couldn't catch why the cranky guy threw the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Why did he suddenly reach in the bag and throw it? I never got that.
What was up with this guy anyway? You know, he being so mean, so nasty, almost like a two-dimensional caricature, I would say. For a long time, I was thinking, you know, he's part of the problem. He must be a representative of this two-dimensional world. I mean, he's so black and white. And then he's the only person who doesn't see anything on the psychic paper.
Yeah, that was really great, too, having no imagination being able to defeat psychic paper.
We've seen that before. We've seen people defeat psychic paper.
That's the idea. He's just so completely bland.
I think his role in this episode was to show that sometimes, you know, good people die, the bad people live, and we don't know why.
Yes.
And it's sort of, you know, that there's a... Sometimes there's a randomness, some might say. Others might say there's a plan. The good die, the good suffer, the evil prosper. What was that? Psalm 1, I think, in the Bible. You know, the very first of all the Psalms. Why do the bad guys get good things happen? And that's sort of the situation here. I mean, he even right to the end, you know, he says, well, you know, forest fire has to thin out the brush to let the trees survive. And, you know, thinking of himself as a redwood tree, and everyone else was just useless brush.
And the Doctor himself actually says it at the end of the episode. You know, people die, and sometimes not the right people survive. And so it's this question about justice, and can we have immediate justice? So what's up with that? There seems to be something that is ultimately, if you think about it, very hard to deal with. It's been one of the major theological questions in the history of mankind. It's like, how can we reconcile a God who is supposed to be good with evil people being around, or even natural disasters happening? What's up with that, you know? And it seems to me that they are setting us up, since this is all taking place on the canvas of this bigger, you know, underlying story of how to reach the promised land, heaven, you know, is there any justice perhaps after this life? I've got the feeling that this episode, there were some themes that were highlighted because of that, and it'll be something that comes back. It's this whole question of, you know, what is good? What is goodness? Is goodness possible, or is it just, you know, random bad luck that happens to us?
Yeah, I think the series can't really go with total nihilism. It can flirt with it and raise the question of meaning, but ultimately this is an adventure show about good and evil, and so...
And hope.
And hope. There was another, have to retain those elements.
I love that little conversation about hope, you know, where Clara is like, how do I do this, being a doctor? Well, wait a minute, I got to give these people hope, even if it means that I have to probably lie to them, telling them that it's all going to be all right, because hope is a very powerful... You know, motivator. And the doctor seems to affirm it in a kind of rational ways. Yeah, it's proven that people who have hope actually run faster than people who give up. But I was thinking, this is very interesting stuff. These are the deeper themes that make you think about, is that true? And can hope, is hope just an illusion? Is it just based on lies? Is there hope possible in this world? Or is that a lie as well? Are we just imagining that there's something like redemption?
Personally, I'm going with the pro-hope view.
Oh, me too.
It's so depressing.
Yes, indeed. And I think the doctor is kind of struggling with that, and thereby kind of reflecting our struggles with themes like that. Is our world just random? Or can we truly hope? And of course, yeah, I'm definitely for the latter statement as well.
You know, the doctor kind of struggles a bit with Clara's lying. The doctor himself has never really had a problem with telling a lie to accomplish his goal, but he's really got a problem with Clara's lies. I mean, at the beginning when she says, "I'm the doctor," and he kind of responds, "Oh, doctor of lies," but it's at first it seems like, oh, it's just that sort of funny cranky thing. I think he's serious. I think her lying actually makes him angry. There's something about Clara lying, whether it's, you know, he's catching on to her, that she's lied to him and to Danny both about what she's still doing, or if it's connected to some larger motivation, like we saw at the end with Missy. The lying throughout this episode and the previous episode, he kept coming back, keeps coming back to this idea of Clara lying. The lying makes him so angry.
But isn't it because it's actually his own reflection that he sees in her? She is now starting to adopt his bad behavior, or at least behavior that he struggles with. And in a way, it's almost as if he's protective of her. He doesn't want her to turn into him and to turn into another doctor. That's, I think, why he is so upset when she first jokingly calls herself the doctor. There's a kind of a dark undertone, even in the conclusion, where he's like, yeah, you were a great doctor or something. What was the exact line? You were
exceptional,
but it has nothing to do with goodness. And then you have that final shot of Missy looking at the scene on her iPad. I didn't know there were iPads in heaven. I guess that Steve Jobs didn't just sit on a cloud.
He's there now.
He must have upsold the iPads to the entire heavenly host. There's heaven is great, but there's one thing missing. I think you're going to love it.
And it is an angel's wing.
Exactly. You can totally see the pitch.
You know, with this, one of the things I liked about this episode is we kind of got into, what does it mean to be the doctor? You know, so we got some of these, you know, rule one, number one of being the doctor, use your enemy's power against them. Mm-hmm. Later on, he says, what is the doctor's role? He's the man who stops the monsters.
Yes.
You know, and whether he makes them stop doing what they're doing or does something worse if he punishes them if he can't reason with them. And then he says, you know, at the end, this planet is protected. You know, and we've heard that before. Uh-huh. I think he said it several times. The one that kind of comes to my mind is Matt Smith's first episode,
with the giant,
Yes, the giant eyeball, I think of it as, where he meets Amy and Rory, and he says to them, you know, this planet is protected. So, I mean, this is fundamentally what the Doctor is about, is he stops monsters, he protects the Earth, he does a sort of a keto on the bad guys. Instead of using, you know, force against them, he uses their own power to stop themselves.
It's a Gandalf moment almost at the end. It's like, you shall not pass! And you've got that shockwave that sends them back.
Exactly.
And he seems to be the big defender. Now, if Missy, if that character is actually trying to break the Doctor or is evil, then perhaps she is using Clara almost as unwittingly as an apprentice or an ambassador to use the Doctor's, you know, bad habits against him. Perhaps she's part of a plan without knowing to undermine the Doctor.
It will be interesting to see what they do with that, because the way Clara was introduced, I mean, at least the best theory now is that Missy was the one who gave her the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
That because all we know is that some woman in a shop gave her the TARDIS's phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor has said someone therefore wants us together. And apparently that person now is Missy. But the way that Clara was introduced was as the impossible girl who ended up who was initially perceived as a possible threat. The Doctor, the 11th Doctor at the time, Matt Smith, thought that she was maybe a fake person because he kept meeting her in different periods of time.
Yeah.
And so he goes to elaborate lengths over multiple episodes in Clara's first season to establish she is really a real girl who was born with normal parents in England in the right time frame. And then it turns out that the reason she's able to appear in multiple periods of history is because the great intelligence had poisoned the Doctor's entire timeline, and Clara then jumped into the timeline to repair it. And that's why she appears at multiple points in the Doctor's life. And this was a very high concept introduction for a companion, unlike anything before. And then in the wake of that, some people complained, okay, now that we've spent that, who is Clara? She doesn't seem to have much going on beyond that. And so some people have suggested that's why she's come to the fore as a character so much in this season. It's to kind of give her own personality so she's not just this concept thing that's already spent. But now, if it turns out that, you know, Missy is the one who put her and the Doctor together, it would seem to be part of some larger plan that involves Clara saving the Doctor at multiple points in his life. And so if she's just, in the end, another River Song, another attempt to trap the Doctor and harm or kill the Doctor, the way River was planned to be, and then it would feel a little repetitious. And so I'm wondering, is there something more complex going on with Missy's plan than just creating a new female weapon against the Doctor?
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to add something about the very end. When Missy says, I chose you well, you know, I think back to the first episode of this season, that personal ad in the paper that drew both Clara and the Doctor to the restaurant with the clockwork people.
Right.
And it said impossible girl lunch on the other side. And then so they figured they turned it over and there was the ad for the restaurant. But what if she assumed it was from the Doctor, he assumed it was from her, but obviously it was from someone else. I think we pretty much guessed that it was from Missy. What if it didn't really, maybe it had two meanings, maybe they misinterpreted the meaning. What if it literally meant the other side? What if Missy is calling Clara to a lunch date, because remember that in Deep Breath, the soldier who died, I think it was in Deep Breath, was met the Missy over tea or lunch.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
So there's this idea of it's a convivial meeting. So what if this is what this is all heading toward, is lunch on the other side? Are we going to see a sort of death for Clara where she ends up on the other side with Missy?
Perhaps even to lure the Doctor to come over to the other side as well, to save her, something like that.
Exactly.
And I keep thinking, you know what? There's got to be something to Missy and who she is, and then what we saw on Mummy on the Orient Express with that character of Gus.
Right.
Which, by the way, I got some great feedback after we...
Gus was the engineer.
Yeah.
No, Gus was the computer.
Was the computer,
oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
that,
right, that's
and
right.
We still don't really know who that was. We got some really great feedback from Arjan Lindeboom, a Dutch listener, who I met actually a couple of weeks ago, and we spent an hour like debating on the mystery of Missy. And he mentioned something that we missed, I think, in the episode about the Orient Express. At one point, I mentioned that Gus is from Augustus, right? And I was thinking of St. Augustine or something like that. And I also said it means it's from majesty originally or something, or royalty or something. And then he reminds us that Matt Smith, when he was called on the TARDIS, it was actually by a royalty about the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm. He says, Your Majesty.
Yeah, Your Majesty. So I was thinking, you know what? What if Missy is actually some kind of a, I don't know, royal, a lord, a queen, a time lord?
A master?
A master? I don't know. I just, I wonder if they will go for that whole, you know, another, you know, again, a return to the master, or whether this is something that we don't know about the whole, you know, the origin of the Time Lords. Are they going to add something very fundamental to that? And could Missy be someone even beyond the Time Lords? Or is there any trace of that in the history of Doctor Who? That there is more to the Time Lords than we know? If there's like I don't know, royalty in that world?
Yeah, the Time Lords, I mean, they have, the Time Lords themselves are a hierarchy. There are other Gallifreyans who are not Time Lords.
Oh,
okay. And we saw a reference to that in the episode Listen, where we're back in the Doctor's room in the barn as a little boy, and the two adults who we overhear talking about him, one of them says, well, he'll never make a Time Lord, so he needs to go into the army.
Yeah.
And that's an illustration of that. So the Time Lords themselves are a hierarchy, a kind of royalty.
Mm-hmm.
But then even within them, there are different ranks. There's a president of the Council of the Time Lords. Other very influential Time Lords are known as cardinals. And mm-hmm. there are certain figures. We know the names of two of them from their mythology. Who were kind of the founders of Time Lord civilization. One of them was Rassilon, who was a kind of engineer that made Time Lord society and time travel possible. The other was a guy named Omega, or in England they say it Omega,
mm-hmm.
Who was a Time Lord that was lost to an antimatter universe when he created this black hole used to power Time Lord civilization. And there was a plot back during the time, it's called the Cartmel Master Plan, and it was back during the time of the Seventh Doctor, where one of the series writers, Andrew Cartmel, had this overarching plan to reveal that the Doctor was a third figure from early Time Lord mythology, who was going to be called the Other. So there were kind of three founding guys, Rassilon, Omega, and the Other, who was going to in some way be the Doctor. They never paid that off because the show went in a different direction and ended up being canceled. Mm-hmm. But they did at least allude to the Doctor being much more than an ordinary Time Lord. For the 25th anniversary special, the Doctor encountered a villainess who knew his secret, whatever it was, and knew that he was much more than an ordinary Time Lord, but she didn't end up saying in what way. And since this was before the whole Time War concept, it wasn't referring to the War Doctor, who later became a big secret.
Well, that might be actually a good moment to take another very short break before we wrap up this episode, and let me tell you about a place where you can go to set up your own dimension, your own little, you know, secret place, or not so secret, it could actually be a public place like a blog or a website, or even if you're a podcaster, a repository for your show notes, for your official presence on the web. I always recommend Bluehost. Blue as, you know, TARDIS blue. They're a very reliable hosting company, one of the biggest in the world. What I particularly like is that they have some really affordable plans. A lot of us are doing this just as a hobby, and we just don't have the full-fledged budget that professional organizations have. But we do want our presence on the web to look professional. Well, that's exactly what Bluehost can offer you. For a very small amount per month, you can get your real WordPress blog. It's super easy to install as well, which I think is a boon for people that are not very technical and just want to, you know, start publishing. And they've got some really great tools to walk you through how to set up your website. Basically, if you start an account, you can have your website up and running within a couple of hours, perhaps even faster. And then you can use the plethora of great-looking WordPress themes and start blogging and start podcasting. And if you want to find out more about Bluehost or sign up, and if you do so through our link, then you will also support our show. You can go to sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner. And I promise you, you won't be disappointed. It's a really great hosting company, and we thank them for being a sponsor of our show. Back to our discussion here on the Secrets of Doctor Who about... but it's already one of the final episodes of this season. I always have to keep in mind that these seasons are very brief. A lot of the American television series are like 20, 22 episodes long. Here, it's going to be over in November. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. From maybe a Christmas episode, I hope.
Yeah, I believe they've budgeted a Christmas episode already.
Sure, that's always something to look forward to. But the overall storyline will need to come to some conclusion. And what is that conclusion going to be? Jimmy, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something that came to mind. It's a bit of another writing flaw in the in this episode, although they could have probably covered it with just a line of dialogue. One of the things that that they've well established is that Time Lord civilization, as we mentioned a minute ago, is powered by black holes, in particularly a black hole known as the Eye of Harmony. And in some versions of the show, the Eye of Harmony is depicted as being on Gallifrey. In other episodes, it's depicted as being inside of the TARDIS. It could be both, given, you know, the wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey nature of things. but it's a source of vast power. And to simply say the aliens have drained power from the TARDIS, it doesn't have any power in this episode... It didn't quite ring true. It doesn't seem that the aliens have the power of a black hole at their command. And we'd expect to see much bigger effects if they did.
And it was unexplained also how they would be taking that power from the TARDIS. It can be just the Doctor opening the door. We've seen that they've been able to suck in people to the two-dimensional realm by touching them. And that's why we get that whole 70s thing. By the way, that was a scene that I loved with the hanging... seat, that the transparent 70s thing. I remember those of my youth. And then there's a little detail where they crash through the window in the garden. You see a Buddha statue kind of indicating, and then even the freaky colors, it's all brown and orange. That was like, that has to be a hippie that lived there. But in the case of the TARDIS and its energy source, it's totally unexplained how they have that power, what they do with it, why they even drain the TARDIS of that power.
Yeah.
Is to materialize? I don't know.
I think they needed to give us an extra line of dialogue that clarified that in some way. It could be like something is severed in the TARDIS, preventing the power from the Eye of Harmony being accessible to the Doctor or something. Mm-hmm. but there would be any number of possibilities. I just thought they needed to do something more with that. Also, I wanted to mention, Dom, you mentioned that that this is related or can be seen as related to the book Flatland by Edwin Abbott. And that's a really fascinating book. It's a very accessible introduction to the idea of how different dimensions might work together. It has a kind of a story that is part of it. And the interesting thing about the story in Flatland, and frankly, I would have just called this episode Flatland because there's nothing particularly flat-liney about this. But in the book Flatland, you have this two-dimensional world that's invaded by a visitor from the third dimension, a character named A Sphere, who is, as his name suggests, mm-hmm, a sphere.
A sphere.
And here you have the reverse, where the two-dimensional beings are invading the third dimension. So it's kind of an inversion of that book. There's also some very interesting stuff in that book. I wrote an article once about Flatland from a religious perspective, and specifically from an apologetic perspective, because one of the things that Abbott does in that book is he shows how the addition of an extra dimension could explain various miracles or apparent miracles. Mm. So, for example, when a sphere goes to visit a two-dimensional character in the book named A Square, the sphere is able to see the square's innards and see the square even and talk to the square even when he's in a house, and so there's nobody else around, but he's hearing this voice. And then A Sphere passes through the plane of Flatland, so you see something apparently created out of nothing as a point, and then it grows to great size and shrinks mm-hmm. away again. And he commissions the square to be the apostle of the third dimension.
Interesting.
And so A Square goes out, starts preaching the existence of the third dimension, mm-hmm. and gets in trouble with the priests, who are all circles.
Oh, nice.
And they're about to execute him. And to prevent him from being executed, A Sphere picks up A Square and lifts him out of the plane of Flatland so he can see the whole plane of Flatland, and then puts him down elsewhere. And so you have this allegory. It's a conscious allegory, as the names indicate, like the gospel of the third dimension, mm-hmm. and so forth. It's a conscious allegory for our world and heaven. And that is something that that plays out very interestingly against the whole Missy fake heaven thing going mm-hmm. on in this series.
So it's like there are things happening in our universe which we might not always understand, like miracles that we read about. But that might just be because our concepts are from this three-dimensional world. We just don't – we are unable to grasp the true nature of these events because they're basically beyond our sphere of knowledge. And
right.
that's a very humbling thing to know or to realize. That's what I loved about this episode. All these pretty big philosophical concepts here. There's much more, of course, to talk about than we have time for, unfortunately. There's some great references. I just want to mention a few. There's the number A113, which is a recurring inside joke of animators, because it was the designation for a special classroom that had that number, where a lot of animators in California worked. I'm not sure why they use it in this episode, because it's made in Britain, but they did anyway. And then, we revisit the underground, which of course is a set, and that's not the first time either, because in 1968, actually the BBC got in trouble with London Underground authorities, because they built another set that looked so convincing that they were basically being accused of filming without permission on official property of the underground authorities.
That likely would have been from the Doctor's first encounter, or one of his first encounters with the Great Intelligence during the Patrick Troughton era, the second Doctor.
Mm. I know that it's in the episode The Web of Fear,
yes,
which features some
one of them.
Hairy creatures.
Yeah, the Yeti, who turned out to be robots.
Right, of course. A Yeti in itself is not scary enough. Well, we have to leave it at this. We thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Secrets of Doctor Who. We will be back, of course, next week, when we will talk about the episode named In the Forest of the Night.
I think it's lovely.
You have reached your destination.
No, we haven't. We're supposed to be in the middle of London.
You have reached your destination.
Oh, stop saying that.
She's only saying it because it's true. We are in the middle of London.
We are in the middle of a forest.
Come on, team, let's do this.
We will, if you stop calling us a team.
All that coming up next week on Doctor Who, and also here on The Secrets of Doctor Who. Thanks for listening. See you next week, and take care. Until then.